You have been listening to Health News.
WMNF is accepting volunteer applications to be part of our on-air team.
And welcome. This is Latinx.
Welcome to the Soul Kitchen. It is I, your resident chef, Big Eddie G.
Join your favorite voices on 88.5 FM, WMNF.org, and our HD channels. If you've always dreamed of being on the radio,
I would love to be on the radio.
Now's your chance. Join your listening-supported radio station, WMNF. Apply under the programming tab at WMNF.org.
Good morning and welcome to the Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa, where every Monday at 11 a.m. we bring you educational conversations with local experts on sustainable topics. Do you like kitchen experiments? Have you wondered about the health benefits of living food and what is living food? Join us today as we speak with guest Sarah Arizola, founder of St. Pete Ferments, about all things fermentation.
Sarah is a St. Pete native and proud Floridian. She's also the co-founder of the annual Florida Ferment Fest, an event that celebrates all things fermented in the Sunshine State. She's a gardening and foraging enthusiast who has worked on organic vegetable and permaculture farms and advocates for fair food and social justice projects through workshop fundraising events. A product of the Sunshine City, she is inspired greatly by her Latinx heritage, Southern roots, and the cultural exchanges unique to the Sunshine State. Welcome, Sarah.
How's it going? So good to be back.
Excellent. It's great to have you here. Can you start by just telling us a little bit about how your kind of passion for fermentation began?
Sure. Well, it started about 8 years ago. I started out by just making kombucha with my mom. We were really into, you know, the whole kombucha thing back then. And we kind of wanted to learn how to make it for ourselves. So we started, and I really did not have any idea what fermentation was during that point in time. I didn't really look up anything on the internet and was kind of self-taught. So I think that kind of helped me just propel and look at fermentation as a style of, you know, food preservation and like almost like a style of cooking food, but without heat. So I didn't really have any of that stigma of like, you know, bacterial metabolizing anything like that. And then from there, I got really interested in vegetable fermentation. And as I was working on farms, I saw a lot of the farmers that I was working with, they were doing the farm to ferment process. So anything that they were growing or anything that was in season, you know, they would sell to the market and to their villages or whatever. And also a lot of the things they would keep to ferment. And I thought that was really cool. That was two of my favorite hobbies kind of put together.
So
that's kind of where it started.
Awesome. So I feel like it's kind of a confusing topic for some people. Can you explain the difference between fermentation and pickling?
Sure. So I get this question all the time. Pickling, I tell people to think of pickling as like this umbrella term for preserving food via acidification. So not every pickle is fermented, but every type style of like fermented vegetable at least would be considered a pickle. So pickle to me and to a lot of cultures around the world is a much broader term than it is here in the U.S., you know, and you say pickle here, people think of, like, your classic deli-style, you know, garlic dill pickle. But to the rest of the world, a pickle can be, you know, just about anything that you preserve with some type of acid. So when we ferment our vegetables, we're favoring lactic acid-producing bacteria, and that's how we get those sour flavors, those sour acids and enzymes that preserve our food, rather than, you know, the application of like a apple cider or white vinegar.
Okay, so like a pickling is something that's a faster process too, right? Like just like a pickle that's not a ferment.
Yes, like your classic like pasteurized canning style pickle. And there's a lot of benefits to that style of food preservation too. I think I had a very, you know, kind of polarizing view on food several years ago, but there's definitely benefits to both. But just like you said, you get a faster result with like the heat canning or pressure canning. It's a great way to put up food for preserving it for long term. It's shelf stable. This is a different style of food preservation.
Right. I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to the Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa. We are talking with special guest today, Sarah Arizola of St. Pete Ferments, about all things fermentation. If you have a question for her, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org and we'll read your question for you.
So, Sarah, when you say that a fermented food is a living food, can you explain that?
Sure. So, if you, I guess the best analogy I give people is fermentation is happening around us at all times. So it's not really anything we invented. It's just a natural process of microbes breaking down organic matter. A good example is I tell people, if you leave a tomato on your kitchen counter and you go on vacation for like 3 weeks or something and you come back and you forget about the tomato, this tomato is not, it's no longer a tomato. Something has happened to it. You either got mold and it's, you know, slimy. The bacteria and yeast and fungi in the air has begun breaking down that tomato. But what we do with fermentation is we don't leave it exposed to the air like that, but we create a more ideal environment for bacteria and yeast that are beneficial to us. And they like to thrive. In the case of, you know, lactic acid fermentation, they can survive in a more like salty environment. So we take that same tomato and put it in a saltwater brine with an ideal salinity, you know, salt to water ratio, we get a different set of bacterial communities. So we get something that's much more pleasant and appetizing to eat. And but we haven't done very much to the tomato itself, and we haven't pasteurized or applied heat to eradicate, you know, any of the wild microbes that might exist, you know, either on the tomato or in the air. So we're allowing those types of microbes to thrive and to cultivate in that environment.
When you say bacteria, I mean, everybody, when referencing bacteria with food, they think it's bad. It's a no-no. So are you saying that some bacteria is good in food?
Absolutely. There's a lot of bacteria that thrives at a lower pH, I guess, without getting into, you know, too much of a science lesson. I can say at St. Pete Ferments, we ferment in a way that it lowers the pH of food. So the bacteria and yeast that are harmful to us in large quantities, you know, they can't survive at all in an acidic environment or a low pH environment. So those happen to be the same sets of bacteria that are, you know, we hear about gut health all the time. Those are the same kind of sets of bacteria that are beneficial or at least not harmful to us.
All right. And so I feel like a lot of people, like you mentioned pickles, a lot of people are eating fermented foods without even realizing it. What are some common fermented foods?
Cheese, for one, pretty ubiquitous. I feel like a lot of people like cheese. Cheese is absolutely cultured, fermented food. Also, kimchi, thinking of all the different vegetable ferments. The kimchi, a lot of hot sauces, kombucha, of course, is just seems to keep getting more and more popular. Not all brands keep theirs, you know, raw and alive, but I think kombucha is a great example of people being able to really like and enjoy fermented foods, you know, on the first try. Beer and wine are, of course, beer, wine, and bread are some of the most ancient forms of cultured foods, which are also very popular. Even chocolate cacao is fermented before it becomes, before it gets ground and turned into chocolate, which is pretty interesting. Yogurt, kefir, tempeh is fermented with a fungi called Rhizopus oligosporus, I think is how you say it. Then you see a lot more kind of culinary, in the world of culinary type things, the rise in the popularity of miso, which is a super ancient Japanese fermented bean paste. Miso and koji and sake, natto, things like that are also fermented.
So pretty much people may be eating fermented foods without even realizing it. Today we're talking about fermentation with St. Pete Ferments, Sarah Arizola. If you have any questions, give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org.
Now, I can't get through a fermentation show without saying this really ridiculous thing, which I'm sure you've heard a million times, but can you pickle everything? Like in Portlandia, can you pickle that? Like, is everything fermentable?
Pretty much. The application in which it is fermented might change. For example, if you were to take, you know, like a black-eyed peas or some kind of bean, that might not lend itself well to lactic acid fermentation, or it might. But there are some styles of fermentation that are better suited depending on what kind of material you're starting with. You know, I think flour and sourdough bread is a great example of that too. We're not going to ferment our flour quite the same way as we're going to ferment, you know, like our like a carrot pickle or something like that. But pretty much any type of organic material, even meat, can at least be cured with or have some type of fermentation application that can be it can be handled with.
So you mentioned, you know, different types of fermentation, different strains of bacteria that are fermenting a product, you know, lactic acid fermentation. How would you know in this situation what type of fermentation you would want to use? And then if you decide, you know, you need a different kind, how do you actually go, like, buy that strain of probiotic? Or how do you actually apply, like, a different types of fermentation depending on the food?
That's a good question. Well, I think, like, for very entry-level styles of fermentation, you know, people probably aren't going to launch into inoculating with fungi, like spores, things like that. That's a little bit kind of, like, next level. As people get more interested in those types of fermentation, though, that's, you know, obviously really amazing, and we love to see that. So I think it just depends on, I mean, I always recommend books and authors specifically for those styles of fermentation. You know, once you kind of open your mind to this, you know, style of food preservation, it can seem really overwhelming. So my suggestion is to just start small, like with the vegetable fermentation, find some books or authors that really resonate with you in that specific category of that food. So there's all kinds of books, you know, that are specific to sourdough bread. If you're interested in that, like, really get into sourdough bread and figure out all about wild yeast and how to maintain a starter for sourdough.
Can I just interrupt by saying something completely relevant but also irrelevant? So there's this, when we're talking about different methods of getting certain things to ferment and getting these starters, there's this British blogger, Zoe Starvery. Do you know where I'm going? So she kind of made waves because she used her vaginal yeast to make a culture for sourdough starter. So yeah. Apparently there's all different methods. Sorry, yeah, continue.
I think that's good. And I think that if we're talking about, especially the human body, there's a lot of stigma, and I think we're starting to break out of that taboo of, what microbes are and what they do for us. We're mostly made of microbes. Like, I think it's like 90% of us are microbial units, cells to actual human DNA. We're outnumbered, I think it's like 10 to 1 or something, like very close to that. So if you think of our bodies being mostly bacteria and yeast and all those different, made up of all those microbes, it kind of helps people, at least in my experience teaching workshops and talking to people in our community, if they have this fear about the idea of eating something that's live cultured or has bacteria, well, it's everywhere, and you're mostly that. So, even though that might, that particular project with this person, Zoe, that might sound really, really strange. And, I personally have not done anything like that. But understanding from like a biological, microbiological perspective, if you break it down, it's really not that
far-fetched.
Not that.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is very like a you are what you eat sort of situation.
Yeah, truly.
Sorry. Okay, so we have a caller on line 2. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Show, Brett.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, we're well, Brett. Is this Brett from Gulf Coast Sourdough?
It sure is. How's it going? Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Brett, how's it going?
It's going great. Sarah and I go way back.
Excellent. I know she did mention that.
So,
Brett, I really wanted you guys to come on because I'm a serial consumer of your product.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That's awesome.
And, I have always had this dream of, making my own sourdough, but for
probably
some reason,
not the way that we just talked about.
Right? But for some reason, I just can't get it together. And I feel like being able to support somebody so close to me who is doing an amazing job and knows so much is the best way to do it. So I wanted you guys to come on today and just talk a little bit specifically about sourdough and kind of the traditional process that you guys have to make your stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So everything we do is sourdough based, and that includes our stuff like our brownies and cinnamon rolls. It kind of sometimes confuses people when we tell them that, because they think of sourdough as just like one style or one specific loaf of bread. But really, just like, you can ferment, just like what Sarah's talking about, you can ferment so many different things. In essence, sourdough is really just a style of leavening. And so you can make any sort of bread. Anything that rises can be made with sourdough starter. And it always adds that good fermented, all that fermented goodness to anything you do, an extra flavor. And personally, what I feel, I think there's two coolest things to me about sourdough are, number one, it is extremely local. So by that I mean your sourdough starter itself is made up of all kinds of different local bacteria and yeast that's how you make your starter. It's just kind of if you're doing it with wild yeast, you're growing whatever is just or living around you. So when you're tasting a locally made sourdough bread, you're literally tasting a flavor of that area. A little bit similar to how honey is. If you get a local honey, it's with the local flowers, the local pollen. So it's like a flavor of that area. The other super cool thing about sourdough is that rising things with starters was actually the original way all bread was made. That's basically how people figured out how to rise bread. It wasn't until like the Industrial Revolution that people really started to figure out what yeast was and how to isolate it to make different strains to make commercial breads that rise faster and all that stuff. But any kind of, all throughout basically human history, the breads that we've eaten have been sourdough leavened bread. And so in that sense, when you're having sourdough, you're kind of traveling back in time to how bread was originally, and I would argue always meant to be made and consumed.
So I have a question. It's probably a popular question these days with the whole like gluten-free movement. But I have heard, you know, that some people who are gluten sensitive will tolerate a sourdough bread better. Do you know anything about this? Have you found this to be true with your customers?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we hear that all the time from people. The important part, though, is that you need to make sure that it's a real sourdough. Unfortunately, sourdough is a term that's not really regulated. And so a lot of times if you see something labeled sourdough in a grocery store, it's not a real sourdough. It's basically a regular bread people threw some vinegar in, make it a little sour, and they call it a sourdough. That's not going to do anything for you. But if you do a real sourdough bread that's made with a starter and fermented for, you know, the long period of time it takes to make a sourdough bread, basically what it tends to do is break down all the stuff that people have issues with digesting. And, you know, just like what Sarah talks about, fermenting things, probiotics, all those things help your digestive system. So in general, any kind of fermented food is going to improve any sort of digestive issues you might have. And that includes if you are, you know, having issues with baked goods.
So we talk about sourdough starters, and I think every single friend on Facebook I had went through the process of making sourdough bread at the beginning of this.
Right, that's the pandemic.
The pandemic bread. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how do you make a sourdough starter? Somebody at home just wants to start the process, they don't have a starter, they don't know how to go about it, is it something that's easy to do?
It is, yes. It just takes a little time. And that's kind of true with the whole bread-making process. So you could say that same thing. I should also say, though, too, that we are always happy to give away starter. If you stop by our shop, we just give it to people for free all the time. So you don't have to make it yourself if you're nearby. But if you want to make your own starter, basically what you do is you set out a little container that has some flour and water in it. You want it to be roughly the same quantity by weight, which is a little different than by cup. But really, if you just mix it together so it looks like a pancake batter or something like that, that's about the right consistency. So, and what I mean by a little container, something like a medium-sized Tupperware, something like that, with something ideally with a little bit of depth, or maybe one of those quart-sized bell jars. So you fill it up maybe half full with this kind of battery-looking stuff of flour and water, and then you just kind of leave it out. And over the course of a few days, and all you're really doing this time is you want to keep kind of refreshing it. You're going to pour out a little bit of it, mix some more flour and water in, always keeping it to basically the same level of stuff in your container, but just replenishing the flour and water. And what you're basically doing is setting a trap. So and the flour and water is the food. And so it starts to collect any kind of yeast, bacteria, et cetera, that is just wherever, you know, around your house or wherever you're doing it. And over time, what eventually happens is you'll start to see some bubbles start to come up. It'll start to, you know, you might see some different, it'll start looking like pancake batter. It might look a little gray or a little more brown or something like that. But eventually what happens is you start attracting these lactobacillus bacteria that produce lactic acid. And the lactic acid has the effect of keeping away all the bad bacteria that you don't want in your starter, because those don't like acid. But what does like acid are different wild strains of yeast. And so after a few, sometimes it can be quick, sometimes it can take up to a week. It just really depends on what's around you. But if you keep refreshing it a couple times a day and you let it sit out, eventually you'll start having this very just happy, bubbly-looking kind of container of stuff that is growing, and you can see all this activity in it. And then you've created a stable little culture of sourdough, and you should give it a name, too. It's important to name your starter.
Just like any pet, exactly.
Exactly,
a few questions I have just from you saying this is, can you use any type of flour? How long does it last? And do you have to put it in the fridge afterwards, or do you just leave it on your counter, like, indefinitely?
Sure, yeah. You can use the best flours to use are whole grain flours, especially when you're starting it out, just because there's more stuff in there that the bacteria and yeast like to eat. You can then convert it over to a white flour starter, or you can even use rye flour or different kinds of flours you have. It's actually remarkably adaptable. We've even started feeding it at times, tried out rice flour and other kinds of things like that, and it's worked out. So they like to eat lots of stuff. But I do recommend, if you're creating a starter from scratch, to do it with a whole grain one, because you'll have a better chance of success.
Awesome.
In terms of keeping it, that really depends on how often you plan to use it. If you plan to go full in and bake every day, then you can definitely keep it out. When it is out on your counter, though, you need to keep feeding it twice a day. And when you feed it, you can up to double it in size. And so that quickly becomes like a swimming pool full if you're not going to be using it all the time. So the alternative to that is to keep it in the fridge. And it could actually be kept in the fridge for up to a month without feeding it. And it kind of goes into this hibernation. We actually have on our website a resources page that we typed up a little care sheet for taking care of starters. So if anybody's curious, they can get more details on that on our website.
Awesome. Brett, thank you so much for calling in and talking to us. And can you tell people, no prices on air, but can you tell people where they can find you and your wonderful bread?
Sure, yes. So we are located in Seminole Heights. We're at 5214 North Nebraska, just before the corner of Hillsboro, right around the corner from the radio station. And we're open Tuesday through Sunday. You can stop in anytime for breakfast or lunch, and we have our breads available and serve sandwiches and other goodies that we make there. And also, we're at a number of different grocery stores in the area. A bunch of restaurants serve us. We have a list of all those and the markets we do on our website, gulfcoastsourdough.com.
Awesome. And can you tell me the name of your sourdough starter?
Yes. We have two names, actually. We have two starters we keep. One of them, his name is Bilbo, and the other one is Frodo. We obviously are kind of, nerds here. So that's those are our starters' names. And I should also say that we also proudly serve Sarah's goodies at our shop, too.
Excellent. Thank you so much for calling, and I'm going to be in for bread soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
I want to remind everybody that you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa. If you have a question for our guest, Sarah Arizola of St. Pete Ferments, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. Sarah, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you kind of, when you first got into it, you were doing kombucha and stuff like that. And I think that's a way a lot of people get into fermenting, is with kombucha, like sharing SCOBYs and all of that. Can you explain what is a SCOBY and what is it doing in your kombucha?
And what it looks like, because yes. I feel like that is the most interesting part.
Sure. So the word SCOBY is actually an acronym for a symbiotic culture or symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast. And if you've ever purchased raw vinegar and you see it says with the mother, that's what that is. So a SCOBY is basically just a mat or of cellulose, also in more scientific terms called a pellicle, mother of vinegar or what have you. Kombucha and vinegar, I will say, are like sister ferments. So they ferment very similarly. They require oxygen. So where that liquid meets the air is where this SCOBY kind of forms. And it looks like, it kind of looks like cellulose. It just kind of is like a blob. And every SCOBY is going to look different, so I know, like, on Instagram, people see a lot of SCOBYs that are, like, perfect, and there's, they almost look like a piece of, like, plastic, like a beige piece of kind of, like, flexible, material. Every SCOBY is going to look different. It just totally depends on your environment and what you're feeding it, what the tea is, what kind of sugar you're using. So I always tell people, don't, just like in life, don't compare your SCOBYs to what's happening on Instagram. It's just a byproduct of fermentation. So we get, in contrast to like the sourdough starter that Brad was talking about, there is a good purpose into, you know, reusing your SCOBYs. But if your SCOBY, you know, if you forget about it or it dies or, you know, if you name it and, you know, you mess up your kombucha making, like, don't worry about it. It's just a byproduct of the fermentation process. There is plenty of kombucha-related yeast and bacteria in your liquid starter. And the SCOBY is really more it's just evidence that the fermentation process is working. That makes sense.
It does. And I never knew that. Like, so feasibly, I could start a new brew of kombucha with just the liquid without a piece of SCOBY?
Sure. And I mean, the SCOBY definitely helps to like kickstart things. But let's put it this way. If I only had starter to make kombucha, like the brew, as long as I had enough starter and it was, you know, pretty tart, I would feel really confident about making kombucha because that next layer of SCOBY is just going to form anyway. I would feel less confident if I only had a piece of SCOBY and no, like, liquid starter.
Got it.
So can somebody start kombucha if they just go to the store and get a kombucha from the store? Could they start it from that?
If it's a live cultured, hasn't been pasteurized kombucha, you could do that. And you know, if you do that, you probably want to look for just like a plain kombucha to start with. Some you know, in the flavoring process, every company does something a little bit differently. I usually give away starters as well if people email me. You can, in theory, you can do that with just a plain kombucha from the store.
So I'm going to move a little bit away from kombucha and towards sauerkraut and, you know, fermented vegetables and things like that. What are some roadblocks that people kind of experience when they move from, like, I feel like kombucha is very accessible and most, you know, vegetable ferments are too, but I have found, at least in my experience, that I have a lot of issues with mold and things like that, and I don't know, like, what's okay and what's not okay, and there's the scrape it off the top people, and then there's the throw the whole batch away people. So what are some issues that people have and kind of ways to either loophole around that or solve the issue altogether?
Oh, yes. This is my favorite thing. I love vegetable fermentation. That's like my jam. So let's start with one of the main things people kind of forget if we're looking at fermenting vegetables is you really want to get your salinity as accurate as possible. So even in my own fermentation journey, I'm very specific with how many grams of sea salt to how many grams of vegetables we use. And in Florida, that is especially important because it's warm here. Things ferment faster. You know, bacteria are like us. When it's warm, they want to, like, go outside and, like, move around. They're really active, right? When it's cold, they kind of go to sleep. So we can use that to our benefit here in Florida, but it's also something to kind of be aware of. So salt helps that good bacteria to sort of get a head start and thrive. And it also is what makes our food taste good. But it also slows down fermentation. So if you find that you're kind of having issues with vegetable fermentation, I suggest to everyone get a gram scale. They're like $10. You'll use it. If you're genuinely interested in fermenting, you will use it all the time. So invest in it to make sure you're really using the proper salt ratio. For sauerkraut or something like that, I like to do anywhere between like a 2.5% to 3% sea salt ratio. So if you have 100 grams of vegetables, that's going to be 2.5 to 3 grams of salt. So that little change, people see great improvements in their home fermenting process. The second thing I always remind people is, you know, when your ferment is active, like sauerkraut, it builds carbon dioxide bubbles as a byproduct of, you know, they're eating these nutrients and they're creating gas, you know, kind of like we do as people. And those, that gas creates like space between your vegetable pieces. And when we ferment sauerkraut, we want to keep oxygen away. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people will make sauerkraut and they won't keep pressing it down below the brine. So you want to make sure to do that, you know, at least once a day. If you're diligent, you might want to do it twice a day. As you see the that kind of those carbon dioxide bubbles between your vegetable pieces, just go ahead and push all of that down and keep it down below the brine, as well as you can by adding weight or, you know, different things. We like to say, keep it below the brine and all will be fine.
So that being said, do you need fancy equipment to do fermentation?
Definitely not. I mean, all of those things are nice, but if you're just starting out and, you know, you're not really sure you want to spend money on that, for my home fermentation project, I still just use mason jars and cut up t-shirts for lids and things like that. You absolutely don't need any kind of special equipment. It's nice to have that kind of stuff because if you, you know, if you want to spend your money on something that looks nice and it and you feel better about, you know, using that kind of equipment or supporting a local person that makes like ceramic waste or something like that, you definitely go for it. But you can also use things, you know, around your house. You don't need anything special, really just like reusing jars and lids.
Is it really, is it important to like sanitize those things or is like washing with soap and water okay?
I usually actually don't recommend like a harsh detergent too often because those types of chemicals are used to remove like all the bacteria. Mm-hmm. So I find that really just kind of rinsing with like really hot water and like a white vinegar is good. Obviously want to let it cool down, but I like to use more of the acid based cleaners or heat is really good too. Just making sure that you don't have any kind of soap or detergent residue is the main thing.
That makes sense. Because then you're killing the bacteria if it's antibacterial soap. So we're talking fermentation with Sarah Arizola from St. Pete Ferments. If you have any questions, give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So we've gotten two emails so far. One is from Bubba who said, I only have a sourdough finisher and that's my prerogative, man. I think he meant he's only eating sourdough and not starting it. and so David says, can your guests recommend a good place in Tampa to buy some good cheap kimchi? I find that all the kimchi at Publix is really expensive, and I think it's my favorite fermented food. Honestly, like St. Pete Ferments makes the best kimchi. Like for me, it's not about good. I mean, because I can buy kimchi at the store, and it doesn't compare. Mm-hmm. Like it is so good, and it has way more flavor. So I definitely appreciate yours. But can you recommend any other places if somebody doesn't have the money to buy some, you know, the primo stuff?
Yes. Support your local Asian market always. We have a few in our area that I like to support. You'll find a variety of other, you know, types of pickles or fermented vegetables unique to their culture. And after all, these cultures in Asia, Korean culture, they're the ones who brought these kinds of foods in the first place. Like they created them. Kimchi is the national dish of Korea. So I would say if you're on the hunt, definitely check out your local Asian market and support those families.
Awesome. And so we haven't talked yet about the health benefits. Why even eat fermented foods?
Sure. To kind of go back to what Brett was saying about, you know, people with gluten intolerances, finding that sourdough bread is a little bit better for them. There's a few reasons for that, and the same as with, you know, fermented vegetables or any kind of fermented food, really. The main benefit is the breaking down of nutrients. So, and we hear a lot about gut health, and that's not like the primary mission of Tasty Ferments, because we just want people to enjoy good food for its flavor and supporting our farmers. But obviously, there are a multitude of health benefits too. So if you think about what bacteria is doing to our food, it's breaking down nutrients. So by the time you're eating that food, a lot of that hard, hefty work of digestion is done for us. So that allows us to absorb nutrients more easily, allows those nutrients to be more bioavailable. So that's the main benefit. And if you think of it like that, oh yeah, that makes total sense. This sauerkraut or kimchi or what have you is it's already been metabolized in a way, right, by all the microbes. So
awesome.
And that's also the same process that makes our food have those unique flavors. So it kind of works hand in hand, right? It's delicious, but it's also good for you.
So we have a few different email responses from other people who are listening. One person from the 813 area code said Oceanic Market for kimchi is great. And then Tom said that there was a market on Park and 49th Street that has great kimchi. And then Greg Seymour says, hello, Tanya, Grace, and Sarah. Greg from Pizzeria Gregario's here. San Juan Market in Tampa carries F&B brand kimchi made in Seminole Heights. Cheers from Greg. So that is awesome. And we are going to take a quick break. We're going to bring in Lisa from the events calendar on, and then we will get right back to Kevin, who is waiting for with a question. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Show, Lisa.
Hi there. Yes, we have some great events coming up. We have the Sustainable Urban Agriculture Coalition monthly meeting, which will be this next Monday. And we have a special movie night featuring Kiss the Ground. And we're going to be watching that as a group and virtually, and then having a discussion afterwards. And that's going to be, again, Monday on the 4th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And then in person in Hillsborough County this Saturday, we have the Trinity Farmers Market at the Commons at Trinity from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then next Saturday, the 9th, is going to be the Fall Plant Festival at USF Botanical Gardens from 10 to 3. More information about that can be found at gardens.usf.edu. And then lastly, in Pinellas, we have some great news. The Southside Fresh Market was just announced that they're going to be going to a six-day market. So they're looking for anyone who is interested in being an educator or a vendor. So more information can be found out on their website. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lisa. Those were all awesome events. Lisa's a part of our events team. We're the Sustainable Living Show. We'll actually let you know of sustainable events that are happening that week. And so I'd like to now move to Kevin from Venice. Kevin, welcome to the Sustainable Living Show. Kevin, are you still there? Kevin, are you there? Oh, it looks like we're having a problem with the phone lines. Maybe we can work on getting Kevin on the air. So while we try to get Kevin, oh, Kevin, are you there? Nope, just kidding. Kevin, try calling back. So, Sarah, are there any dangers to fermentation?
Well, like with any, you know, new thing that you're trying out, I always tell people, if you don't get it right the first time, just try again. There are definitely things that can go wrong in the fermentation process. But I will say that not always, but in general, when that happens, especially with the wild fermented vegetable kinds of creations, you're going to know if something has gone badly.
Like if there's a blue mold on top, don't eat it.
Right. Yeah. all those colors in nature that are like warning, like blues, black, red, like stay away. That's like nature's way of telling us like to not eat that thing. Right. And I am, as far as the people who say, like, to just keep it off, just want to remind people that not everyone's immune systems are the same. So what might work for you may not work for someone else living in your house who has, you know, compromised immunity or things like that. So, you know, I don't recommend doing that because everyone's different and everyone has different needs for what makes them feel well. So I'm sensitive to that. But as far as like a surface yeast, like a comm yeast, which kind of looks like a white feathery texture, a lot of the times that's just a like a yeast bloom. And if you search like what that looks like, it looks a lot different from mold, but sometimes it can be mistaken for that. So something like that, I could feel confident about just keeping off. But if we're seeing like a, you know, myceliated mold and fungi, you know, that's
better be safe.
Stay away from.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then any kind of smell that is not appetizing, you know, with sauerkraut, it's going to have a strong smell, but it should be almost like intoxicating in a good way. Like, wow, this smells sour. It smells good. It might make you salivate too. Like your body's telling you to eat it. With those bad smells, you know, you're not, your body's not going to have that same response.
It'll be the opposite.
It'll be the opposite.
Okay, Kevin actually called back, so let's try to get him on the air before we run out of time. Kevin, welcome to the Sustainable Living Show.
Thank you so much. I was wondering if you have a recipe for hard kombucha.
I do not. That's a good question, though. What I have noticed people using for hard kombucha is, let me see, I have seen people use the packaged champagne yeast, Lalvin, which is like a yeast that they use for dry wine or champagne.
Okay.
So if you are interested in doing something like that, I would recommend visiting your local homebrew store. They will likely have it, or they will have tips on how
they have that and SCOBY.
Most of them do, yeah. I've seen, I don't know whereabouts you are in the area, but in St. Petersburg, we have an awesome homebrew company and brewery called Avid Brew, and they're just outside of downtown St. Petersburg, and they are super kind and helpful, and so if you're in the St. Pete area, I would recommend going to them for making anything alcoholic like that.
Cool. Very good.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Kevin.
Thank you so much. Bye.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Sustainable Living Show here on WMNF Tampa with our guest today, Sarah Arizola of St. Pete Ferments. If you have a very quick call for us here at the end of the show, you can call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. Really quick, I want to nerd out for a second. Just back on the health benefits of probiotics real quick. There was a really cool study that came out from Stanford recently talking about how a fermented food diet increases your microbiome diversity, so all your good gut bacteria, and lowers inflammation and thus improves your immune system. So Sarah's ferments are not only delicious, but they are making you healthier while you eat.
Speaking of salivating, as you're talking, I'm literally drooling, so I would like some kimchi right now.
And so,
please.
Sarah, we're coming up on the end of the show here, and I wanted to get to your new like endeavor that you've got coming up called The Place. So can you tell us a little bit about that and also some information about where people can find you and your goods and all of that?
Sure. So The Place is going to be a retail cooperative coming soon to the Fringe District near downtown St. Petersburg. And it's a united collection of small business owners. That includes myself, artist Ashley Cantero, Bodhi Basics, which is Tim Vorpirian, Aziz Vintage, which is my friend Ashley, And then the last one is Becca with Dirty Denim. So it's five of us women-owned businesses, and we are creating a safe space for artists to share their work. We definitely want this to be, like, have a strong bend to involving the community who are, you know, looking for a sense of connection and place. I think with my business coming up on our 5th year anniversary this week, and just thinking about what to do next in St. Petersburg, which is just so laden with development and construction, and things are really changing rapidly. And so the five of us kind of got together to talk about this idea. So expect many cool things. I recommend following the place St. Pete on Instagram. And, you know, we are working diligently toward a fall grand opening. So stay tuned for that. As far as St. Pete Furman, you know, we are starting up on farm season and farmers market season. So that will be opening back up this weekend. We participate in the Saturday morning market downtown St. Petersburg, as well as Torrey Avenue Market on St. Pete Beach every Sunday. And you can find that schedule as well as the list of all of our retail and restaurant partners at stpeteferments.com. So all of our information is there. We're also on Instagram at St. Pete Ferments. This is going to be our celebrating 5 years. It's pretty amazing, and it feels like the slowest and quickest 5 years of my life. So I'm just, once again, like, really thankful to our community and all of the farmers we work with and everyone who, you know, you have to have a certain amount of patience for fermentation, and I feel like we've kind of helped our community see and view fermentation for the beauty, art, and science that we see it as. So we're just super grateful that we can be able to do all the things that we do.
Awesome. That's really lovely. Can you tell me, what is the weirdest or coolest thing that you have fermented?
Oh, okay. Oh boy. Let's see. I don't know if it's that weird, but I don't know. we do a lot of stuff.
What's the first? Give me the first one that comes to your mind. We got 1 minute.
Okay, we did a collard kimchi last year that ended up being a banger. So everyone really liked that one. So collard kimchi, and
I like it. Very, very southern.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, it was so wonderful to have you on. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you, Tanya, for being in the studio with me today. Bill on the boards, Clark on the phones, and you listeners, thank you for always tuning in to us here at WMNF Tampa.
Well, folks, we're coming to an end of another great sustainable living show here on WMNF Tampa, your community conscious radio station. I'd like to thank Tanya Vidovic and Grace Banky for a darn good show, and thank you, Clark, for getting the calls through. So, from everyone here at WMNF Tampa, until next Monday at 11 o'clock, stay safe, stay thoughtful, and know that you are loved.